Welcome to the America's Quarterly Podcast. I'm Brian Winter. Latin America's next pandemic election will be in Ecuador on February 7th. Whoever wins will have their work cut out for them.
What Ecuador really needs is a government that can govern. And that will, I think, require a process of reconciliation and a process to find a common agenda, reaching out to the other side, you know, especially at this point where there's so much polarization between political forces.
You could certainly make a case that Ecuador's presidential election is a bellwether. That is, it's relevant beyond just that country of 17 million people. First, it's facing the same changes as many other countries in the Americas right now. The pandemic has been so awful. We all remember those terrible scenes of bodies piling up in the streets of Guayaquil, Ecuador's biggest city, last year. Their economy has been hit hard, too. It probably shrank about 8% in 2020, which was just about in line with the average in Latin America. But if you look at the field of candidates in this election, they also really closely reflect the personalities and dynamics of what we've seen in some other elections recently. There's a candidate who is serving as a kind of proxy for a once popular leader from the 2000s. That was the peak of the commodities boom, of course, and is promising a return to those good times. There's also a conservative, pro-business candidate who's hoping to build on the market-friendly policies of recent years under President Lenin Moreno, and a third candidate, also running from the left, who appeals to the increasingly powerful indigenous population in Ecuador. So I think you really can make a case that Ecuador will at least tell us something about which way the political winds are blowing in the region during a year when we'll see several of these elections. To help us break down the state of the race and offer insight into where Ecuador's economy and politics are going, I'm joined by Sebastián Hurtado. Sebastián is the co-founder and CEO of Profitas, a political risk consultancy based in Quito. Sebastián, welcome to the AQ podcast.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you for having me.
Sebastián, I want to start with the state of the country the next president will inherit. Now, as I said in the introduction, Ecuador was hit badly, with a death toll upwards of 14,000 people now. But in terms of vaccine rollout, more than 85,000 Pfizer doses are set to begin arriving in the country this week to start vaccinating health professionals. President Lenin Moreno has announced mass vaccination will begin in March. What's the situation right now with the pandemic specifically? How do you see it, and how does it feel to be there in Quito?
It's been a tough year here in Ecuador. As you mentioned, we had a major outbreak around March, April last year. The city of Guayaquil was particularly badly hit early on in the pandemic, right before the government could introduce any lockdowns or restrictions. So the virus was raging back then, and that caused all that death in that city. We ended up the year with the worst excess deaths per capita in the world after Peru.
Is the economy in Ecuador right now, is it fairly open by regional standards? I mean, there's such variety among countries in terms of what's limited and what's not. How would you describe the kind of the lockdown situation compared to other countries?
The government tried to introduce some additional restrictions at the end of the year just to avoid the potential for large social gatherings at the end of the year. But they only lasted a couple of weeks because the Constitutional Court deemed them unconstitutional. The restrictions are basically in the hands of local governments. I would say they're not that significant. There are no curfews anywhere. There are no mandatory lockdowns, and it's not that stringent as it is in some of the neighboring countries.
So let's talk about the economy in that context. I mean, Ecuador is no stranger to economic crises. Inflation in the late 90s got so bad that the country dollarized in 2000. How does the crisis we're seeing right now compare to previous ones? And how is that pattern of closures and restrictions that you're talking about, how is that affecting the economy's ability to recover?
On the economic side, I would say the situation isn't as bad as we would have expected a few months back. We expected for exports to just collapse, but that didn't happen. Actually, all exports grew during 2020, which was very impressive. That helped contain the trade surplus or provide Ecuador with a trade surplus, which limit the drainage of dollars since we have a dollarized economy. And that helped sustain the foreign account in Ecuador. Dollarization proved to be very resilient during this year within the financial sector, which was a major source of economic instability in previous crises. It held well. It has remained liquid and well capitalized. And all those factors have helped held the Ecuadorian economy not in a great shape, but I think we got to avoid the worst part of an economic crisis in Ecuador.
So the economy is not that bad, but that has not helped the current president, Lenin Moreno. So let's talk about the politics now. Let's talk about kind of the current situation as well as the outlook for this election next month. President Moreno has an approval rating of 7%. He's not standing for re-election. And, you know, you've got a field of candidates. You know, there might be two, maybe three candidates in a large field that really have a shot. I'd like to start with Andrés Arauz. This is the handpicked candidate of Rafael Correa, who, of course, was president of Ecuador back during the boom years. It's the second time Correa has tried to pick somebody. The first one was Moreno. And for those who don't know this story, it has a betrayal worth of a telenovela, if you will. I mean, Moreno turned against Correa very early in his presidency, and the two men, well, they don't get along. I'm being diplomatic, of course. What can you tell us about the relationship between Arauz and Correa? I mean, what has Correa done to try to ensure that this time might be different and he might end up picking somebody who remains loyal?
Well, I think Mr. Correa is not going to make the same mistake twice. I think he didn't want to choose President Moreno last time, but he was the only candidate from Correismo who stood a real chance of getting elected in the previous election. So he had to go with him. But I don't think Mr. Correa thought of Mr. Moreno as a loyalist necessarily. So he's not risking that this time. I think he chose someone who is more aligned politically with him.
And he's quite young, right? I mean, he's in his 30s, so maybe he owes his career to Correa in a way that Moreno did not.
All the public support that he enjoys now, he owes that to President Correa. He was really an unknown figure until he was chosen by President Correa as the presidential candidate. Mr. Correa will definitely have a lot more influence on him than he had on Mr. Moreno.
We published recently a guide to the candidates in the Ecuador presidential race, and you can find that on the America's Quarterly website. And it includes a quote from Arauz who says, "The president will be me, and Rafael Correa will be my principal advisor." So that's a guy that's not, I mean, he's not even making a secret of the fact that he intends to, you know, govern with that, I suppose, partnership in mind. I mean, do you think it's similar in some ways to the dynamic between Alberto Fernandez and Cristina Kirchner that we're seeing now in Argentina, or do you think it might be different in some ways?
I think the influence of from President Correa on Arauz will be more significant than the influence of Cristina Kirchner on Fernandez. But on the other hand, I don't think Mr. Correa is really interested on just coming back to Ecuador to directly govern through Arauz. I'm not really sure he's looking to coming back on a permanent basis to live back in Ecuador. You know, he's living in Europe, and that was sort of his plan. But I think he will be a key opinion on major political and economic decisions.
That's almost verbatim the way that people described what Cristina Kirchner's influence might be. They said, oh, well, you know, she's not really interested in the day-to-day anymore. And now here we are more than a year in. And look, I mean, Alberto Fernandez is the president and he makes the major decisions. But there have been some very public episodes, at least in Argentina, where, you know, these former presidents, they want to be heard. And of course, Correa originally wanted to be Arauz's vice president, which would have been exactly following the Argentine model.
I agree with you. President Correa will definitely be a present figure. I mean, if he needs to act in order to support policies of the Arauz administration, he will step in and he will help politically to try to move forward the political and economic agenda of Correismo, or I would say of the citizens' revolution in Ecuador. However, you know, the difference with Moreno is that Arauz has a lot more knowledge on economic issues just because he's more prepared in those areas. So I think he will still have some ideas of his own in his discussion with President Correa.
How big of a factor are Correa's legal problems? I mean, for those who don't know, he was convicted in April 2020 on corruption charges of accepting bribes in exchange for public contracts. He's currently in Europe, as you've said, and if he returns subject to arrest, he's also banned from politics for the next 25 years. You know, in reading those words, it just like it's this deja vu. So many other leaders from that era, the pink tide of the 2000s, particularly the late 2000s, had legal issues, whether it's Cristina Kirchner or Lula in Brazil. What has the impact been of all of that on Correa's image? Is he still seen as a flawed figure by many Ecuadorians, or has he kind of done more like what some of these leaders have done and portrayed the accusations against him as politically motivated lawfare, and therefore, you know, helped at least diffuse part of the damage?
Well, I think that the opinion on Correa is pretty divided. Some of the support that Correismo still enjoys in Ecuador is a reflection of that. There's a large group of voters or large group of the population that thinks that the accusations against Mr. Correa are politically motivated. What I can tell you about the legal problems of Mr. Correa is that if they make it to the presidency and if Arauz make it to the presidency and Correismo makes it to the presidency, job number one is going to be doing away or reversing some of the political reforms advanced by the Moreno administration during the past few years. Those political reforms had to do with changes in political institutions and legal institutions and judicial institutions that play a significant role in the conviction of President Correa. So I think they're going to reverse some of those reforms in order to strike down some of the rulings against President Correa. And I think that's one of the major political goals of Arauz administration. Actually, Arauz has been transparent about that. No? He considers that his colleagues from Correismo have been wrongly prosecuted. I think most of the legal problems Correistas face will evaporate.
How much of a break in terms of economic policy do you think Arauz would undertake? I mean, he's been very critical of the IMF deal. How much of a change in the business environment do you think there would be if Arauz gets elected and Rafael Correa is the one kind of running things or at least providing key advice in the background?
I think there will be a significant reversal in economic policy, especially in terms of opening up the economy, which has been a feature of the Moreno administration. Opening up in terms of trade, looking for to advanced free trade agreements with the U.S., the Pacific region. It's been opening up opportunities for the private sector in the oil sector, also limiting the scope and reach of the central government. I think we're going to see some reversal of that. We know how Correismo works. Correismo wants a more centralized economy and a strong state presence. And I think we're going to go back to some of that. However, I think at the end of Correismo, Correistas became more pragmatic than they were at the beginning of their government. And I also think the fact that Ecuador is going through a very tough economic time and will have limited resources, that will make an Arauz administration more pragmatic. They're already attacking the IMF agreement, but I'm not really sure they're planning on completely breaking up with the IMF. They will try to renegotiate, adjust those terms to something that it's more consistent with their traditional policies.
Let's switch gears here and talk about Guillermo Lasso. He is a business leader and former economy minister and governor. He founded his own political party called Creando Oportunidades, and this will be his third time running for president. Is the third time the charm? I mean, do you see any chance of victory for him? What can you tell us about him?
Lasso is a candidate that is favored by the markets. I think he had his best chance in the previous election when he was the clear agent of change after 10 years of a Correa government. He almost won that election, you know, against President Moreno. The problem this time is that, as we discussed before, Ecuador is living through a major economic crisis. There's a lot of frustration in the public. There's a strong demand for change. I think Lasso is not that well positioned under that circumstances, because somehow Lasso represents the status quo. Somehow he's the incumbent candidate, in the sense that he's been supportive of many of the Moreno policies of the last few years, either directly or indirectly through his support in Congress to some of the reforms that Mr. Moreno has advanced. So it's going to be an uphill battle for him to position himself as the real change agent in this election.
Basically, what I'm hearing is Moreno is seen as a neoliberal, and while he doesn't officially have a candidate, at least not a candidate with a chance, the closest thing in the race to continuity of Moreno's vision is the man that he beat 4 years ago, right? I mean, this is the amazing thing about politics sometimes, but that's basically correct, right?
That is correct. It's sort of crazy, but it's correct. He turns out to be the incumbent, you know, and it's I think he's struggling to tell the public that he's not. He's having trouble criticizing Mr. Moreno and criticizing his policies, because he will be offering some of the same things during his government. He will probably accelerate the economic opening agenda that was timidly pursued by Moreno. He will try to move forward with a U.S. trade deal. He will try to stick with the IMF deal, even though he might try to renegotiate some of its terms. So people will have trouble seeing how that is different from what they have right now. But still, it's a really close race, and there's a lot of uncertainty in this election.
Let's talk about this third leading candidate, Yaku Perez. He's a fascinating figure. He's an environmentalist and indigenous rights activist. He was a leader in anti-austerity protests in October 2019. Now, he's on the left, like Arauz, but he's not aligned with Rafael Correa. He's coming from Ecuador's largest indigenous organization, keeping in mind that that represents, of course, a very significant percentage of Ecuador's population. What does his being a candidate say about indigenous politics in Ecuador and the state of the left more broadly?
You know, the case of Perez is very interesting. Traditionally, the indigenous candidates haven't made it very far in national elections in Ecuador. And that's because they have usually had a very limited political agenda that didn't make inroads in a wider support base. It's a different case in the case of Yaku Perez, because Yaku Perez I think can reach out a wider audience just because he has a wider political agenda. He has an agenda on environmental issues. He's the sort of the protector of water sources and water in general in Ecuador. He has an anti-mining agenda. And I'm still not ruling him out in this election. He could be the surprise of this election. He was elected 2 years ago as the prefect of Azuay. That's a province with almost no indigenous population. Also because he's the clear outsider of this election. Those factors have helped him already because he's trailing Lasso and Arauz in most polls. I think he still stands some chance. However, we at this point, we still think that a second round between Lasso and Arauz is more likely.
We're recording this, Sebastián, as a leadership transition is happening here in the United States, where I'm talking to you from today. And God knows that, you know, a lot of countries need healing right now. A lot of countries are polarized and hurting with large percentages of unemployed and economic damage. It's not easy for anybody, whatever your ideology or how much political support you're elected with. As you look ahead, you know, having gone through these three leading candidates with us here today, what's the one important step that you think the next president of Ecuador has to take, regardless of who it is?
What Ecuador really needs, it's a government that can govern. And that's what any candidate should focus on. I think the worst scenario for Ecuador is going back to a period when we had governments that lasted for 2 years, and we had ministers that lasted for a month, and we had permanent political instability, and we had very weak governments that could not advance any public policy. And that was the case in Ecuador for the most part before the Correistas came into power in the middle of the 2010s. So we really need a government that, on one hand, that are able to maintain political stability, and on the other hand, that they are strong enough to advance public policy. So I think that's what the new government, any government, should focus on. And that will, I think, require a process of reconciliation and a process to find a common agenda, reaching out to the other side, you know, especially at this point where there's so much polarization between political forces. I'm not really sure how possible is that? I think that's a question for a politician, but I think that's really important.
I'm going to press you on this, though. I mean, do you think there's any chance of success?
It's going to be tough. You know, one factor that any of the new governments will deal with is that we're going to have a very fragmented Congress. We're going to be electing new Congress people in the first round of this election, early in February. We have 16 presidential candidates. That's going to end up making for a very fragmented incoming Congress. So none of the leading candidates will have a clear majority in Congress. They will have to negotiate policies, and they will have to negotiate some governability going forward. Let's hope they find some common ground and we can agree on a basic economic and political agenda going forward.
Well, here's hoping for a positive outcome. Sebastián, thank you so much for joining us on the AQ podcast.
Thank you. It's been great to be with you.
Thank you for listening to the America's Quarterly podcast. You can read more at americasquarterly.org. Finally, if you enjoyed the episode, please leave us a review, give us a rating, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. The America's Quarterly podcast is produced by Brendan O'Boyle and Leonie Rawls. America's Quarterly is an independent, not-for-profit publication of America's Society and the Council of the Americas.